to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, this is Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. I'm delighted to be speaking on the phone with Susan Violante. She is the author of Innocent War. You know, although this book is classified as fiction, the story depicts her father's life through war's hardships, dangers, and tragedies. Susan is going to give us a little glimpse into her own life while raised in a home with parents that survived the war. But first, a little about her. Born and raised in Venezuela from Italian immigrants, Susan completed a BA degree in political and administrative studies before moving to the United States. Although she has built a career as a business analyst accountant, she also has kept herself active as a freelance writer in the U.S. while starting her family, and she does have two girls and, of course, a husband. It was her own family's birth that inspired her to just check out a little bit more about her parents, and that's the publication of this first book, Innocent War. She's currently working on her second book, Life After Rubble, Behind an Immigrant's Past. Susan is also host of her own internet radio show called I Have Something to Say Live, and is currently putting together the Spanish version, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it. In English, it's translated as Life is a Story, Live. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Irene.
Well, this is just a real pleasure for me to talk to you. It really interests me, the fact that you were able to sit down with your father and have him tell his stories and record it. I'm sort of reflecting back to doing family history and talking to my father, and he was very reluctant, especially when I attempted to record. So this has been very different, I'm sure.
Yes, he actually, when he recorded, I wasn't there. I suggested it, and I didn't know he did it until 2 years later. And with my mother, I had to stop because she started getting nightmares again. So it's not easy for some people to talk about their past, and if they had a traumatic one, it's even worse.
I'm sure, and it's interesting that your father actually did this on his own. Do you know what the purpose was for him to do these recordings?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know. I just suggested that he's a funny guy. He's always telling jokes, and I suggested that he would tape some of his jokes and anecdotes and all that so that I could put together a little memoir thing for his grandchildren to get to know him. And he didn't even reply to me, didn't respond or anything. And then 2 years later, he gave me 5 tapes, and when I put them on, I just didn't expect what I found because it was just all of his experiences since he was a little boy to the date. So my jaw dropped. I didn't know what to do with it.
I can well imagine. So when you started listening to these tapes, obviously, I would imagine that you started from the beginning, his early childhood.
Yes.
Were you surprised of some of the things that you heard?
Yes. I was very surprised because he didn't talk about himself. I knew some of the war stories about my mother because my grandmother would tell them to me. But on my father's side, none of them came to South America, so they were all in Italy, and I didn't really know anything about him. And that is why I was in search of getting to know him, because I knew nothing. I realized when I had kids that I didn't know anything about him. So to learn some of the things that he went through, no, it was not just surprising, but all the pieces of the puzzle about him started to come together, and I started to understand him more than I did before, and that was priceless to me.
Oh, I can just well imagine. I mean, I just got goosebumps just listening to you say that, because I was just thinking about my own father a couple of weeks ago, and he's passed on now, but when I really started thinking about him, I was actually at a workshop, and what I was to do is reflect back, and there were a lot of questions about my father, and I really realized that I did not know him. Mm-hmm. And that was the final thing, is I did not know him, because there were so many secrets that he kept, and he really didn't want to talk about his childhood. I think that a lot of times, you know, our parents, especially from that era, so much of it is so traumatic that they don't want to relive it. Like your mother, for instance, she was having nightmares, she said, when she talked about it.
Yes, and they had totally different experiences about war. So I'm very interested in getting hers as well,
mm-hmm.
because they were in different places. It's a point of view of a female instead of just a male as a kid, and also to see how they cope with it as they grew up. So I'm very interested in getting to, and I'm having just the hardest time to getting it out of her, even, you know, worse than my father. So
I imagine there's just still so much pain that she has never really resolved.
It's a lot of pain, and I realized with my father, and actually the reason I'm in the U.S. is because he had a flashback of the hunger he went through in Venezuela when people went crazy in 1989. That's when they decided to come to the U.S., and he basically left everything when he was standing in a line to try to buy bread on a store, and he came back home, he said, you know, I'm not doing this again, and it was the hunger. The biggest trauma that he had as a child was being so hungry and not having anything to eat that brought us to the U.S. It was just too much for him to bear, just the thought of going hungry again.
So looking back, as when you were growing up as a child, or now, you know, looking back as to what your childhood was like, and the fact that relating to him having to stand in line because there was just no food to get that loaf of bread. How do you feel that experience of his reflected in how he raised his family, for instance, or, you know, how he treated you or anything to do with food?
Well, he's always been a very hardworking man. And I resented the fact that I basically have counted memories of family outings with him because he was always working, and so I can see now why his dedication to work was not becoming rich, and that was not, you know, becoming anybody or anything. It was just making sure that there was food on the table and a roof over our heads was so important to him that his life became that, just to be responsible. And I could understand why somebody who as a kid was so adventurous and somebody who has so much personality and jokes, and he basically dedicated his life to work and make sure that we all had everything that he didn't have when he was growing up. And that's one aspect of him. The other aspect that relates to that is that it doesn't matter what's going on, the food time is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he wakes up in the morning thinking what he's going to eat for lunch. He finishes eating lunch and he's thinking, what am I going to eat for dinner? And I thought first that was like a very Italian thing because everything revolves around, you know, the mealtime and family and everything. But it's more complicated than that, I realized after I listened to the tapes and, you know, and put two and two together with all of his actions.
So it sounds like basically he was emotionally absent as a father.
Oh, yes, yes.
And so how did that, as a child, you growing up in that family with an emotionally absent father, how did you feel?
Lonely. It was very lonely. My mother was she had in her mind that she needed to make me strong. And I can see that that's a little bit more also as a, you know, a little bit of the war post-traumatic stress, because in her mind, you know, crying or being kind of too sweet or there were weaknesses and not traits. And so she was kind of harsh with her girls and trying to make us strong so that in her mind we would survive. And I am more like a kind of, you know, easygoing person, and I think I have more of my father's personality. And so I crave that. I would see him, you know, when he was home and he was always, you know, making so much noise in the house and people laughing. I wanted to know more about him. I wanted to relate to him, and it was not possible.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just impossible. And so my whole life, basically, you know, everything I did became a race to try to call his attention as a child.
And did you succeed in creating that attention towards you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now we do. I mean, by putting the book together, I talked to him like multiple times a day, every day. And from being the child that was basically alienated, if I may say, because I had nothing in common. My sister and my brother are civil engineers, and my father worked in construction. So they had that in common, you know, as we grew up. But I'm a political science major, so So I had nothing in common with him, and being a girl was even more difficult because he's a Sicilian guy, and, you know. So from all of his kids, I am the one that knows him better now.
Mm-hmm.
And now he just calls me just to see how I'm doing, or just to tell me a joke, or just because he remembers something else I can use on my next book, and it paid off.
What do you think switched in him that all of a sudden, you know, at one time there was no attention to you whatsoever because you were female. He was working, and his main focus is to provide. But now all of a sudden you're an adult, and he's phoning you every day, several times a day. What switched in him?
A few years ago, when I first finished my the first manuscript of the first edition, I did it in a rush because he was having brain surgery. And I went to Florida to take care of him, and I stayed there about a month. And I took what I had on the manuscript in a binder. And right before the surgery, his friend of all his, you know, for many years, came over to visit him, and he saw the manuscript, and he asked me, "Why did you do this?" And I looked at him, and I said, "Just to get to know Dad." Mm-hmm. And so my father's attitude changed when he heard that, I think. I mean, we've been talking always about the book, but while I was writing it, but I noticed a big change on his attitude towards me after that day.
Do you think that it was because all of a sudden the focus was really on him?
I think that he realized that there was more to a father-daughter relationship. I don't think he realized it before, and I can tell that because in his youth, you know, as he grew up, he didn't even have that connection with his sister. You know, he had a connection with his mother because his mother had to raise him. But he was basically grew up on his own. His he was always on his own. He did whatever came to his mind, and he's just very individualistic. And in a way, you know, a lot of people that go through war grow that way because people that they are friends with die the next day. You know, people that were there today are not there tomorrow, and they just become their own little world, and they just don't know how to open up to other people.
Well, and they have this fear of abandonment and loss because all of a sudden, you know, as they, in a war, they're seeing people being killed and just, you know, disappear. And so they're afraid to get close to anybody. And, of course, this reflects onto the family, too.
Oh, yes.
But the other thing is you say, too, that he was basically raising his family and the way he was raised.
Yes.
He really didn't know any different.
Yes.
So speaking of different, when you then started raising a family, did you do it differently?
Oh, yes.
And in what way?
I'm glad that I got this tape when my daughters were very young. I realized that being a mother did not have to become a job. It did not have to become anything that I didn't want it to be. And so my priority was to make sure they knew who I was. And to teach them everything that I'm learning. I mean, not pick and choose, okay, you're going to do this and you're going to be like this. No, just kind of embrace their personalities and guide them through everything that they go through by teaching them what I've learned from my experiences and not pretending to be perfect or somebody I'm not. And so I let them see my flaws at the same time that I let them see my traits. And, you know, they know me better than anybody. That's what I did different. I was blessed to be able to do it since they were kids.
So I know that, you know, raising smaller children, it seems to be easier. But once they get to be teens, there's rebellion that happens. And I wonder if the success you did with your girls, because you know, all of a sudden they didn't want to learn from you because there's a stage that always happens that they know more than everybody else in the whole world.
Yes.
Did that happen to you?
Of course.
And how did you handle it?
I let them, some of the times, you know, I would tell them, okay, you want to, you know, bang your head against the wall, go ahead, you know, and then just sometimes I just have to pick up the pieces. And sometimes I would just be ahead of them. And tell them, hey, you know what? When I was 5 years younger than you, I did what you're trying to do now. So, because I was a handful, and so I don't hide them. I don't hide my mistakes. And so I would tell them, okay, you want to go ahead and do that, but this is why I don't want you to do it.
Uh-huh.
I did this, and this is what happened to me, and this is what consequences were. And so sometimes by doing that, it gives them the time to pause for a moment and weigh it and put in a balance and say, is it worth the risk of doing this? And that's all I want.
Uh-huh.
You know, if they take that little pause, because I didn't do that many times, and I got hurt sometimes bad, and so I wanted them to just take the time and think about it. And then if, after you think about it, you still want to go ahead, well, you know, I guess I'll pick up the pieces. And you know, I've been blessed. They're just saying compared to how I was at their age. So,
And so how were you at that age as a teen? What were you, you know, were you rebellious? Tell us.
Well, my parents were very strict. So it didn't matter whether or not I was punished. I was always punished because they wouldn't let me do anything. And so I saw punishment or being grounded or privileges taken or whatever, they were irrelevant. I would just wanted to do something, I would do it. So if I went to school and they usually don't let me go to my friend's house or whatever, I would just go to school and go to my friend's house. I wouldn't let them stop me. But for example, I can't swim, but I have scuba dived, just to give you an example, you know. And it was just like that. We're on the beach, and I see people scuba diving. Hey, can I join? And, you know, and I would go and, you know, or snorkeling. And I can't swim. I would just tie myself to a little life vest and just keep it floating.
Funny.
So that reasoning, though, that adventure is a part of me. I didn't understand then. I understand now that I see what my father was like as a kid. And that's why I wanted, I guess. I had that craving of relating to him. But at the same time, I tried, you know, my kids to not to suppress that, but to guide it.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Susan Violante, author of Innocent War. Stay tuned because we're going to continue this interesting conversation with Susan and just find out a little bit more about her. And as you can see, you know, she's coped a lot with being raised by an immigrant or stricken parents. Got more to say, and it's just really interesting to listen to her, so stay tuned. And in the meantime, if you'd like to check out her website, it is SusanViolante.com. As a teen growing up and doing these rebellious things and with your strict parents, were there any consequences that happened through them and the punishments? You know, how did they treat you?
Oh, I was, you know, I was the handful black sheep, you know, they're Italians from a very old time, so I would get spankings sometimes, and, you know, not until my, well, up to when I was, like, on my early teens, I probably got spanked somewhere.
Uh-huh.
But it was not, there was always love and respect in it. I don't understand how to put it, because you say, well, you know, when you beat a child, there's no love and no respect. They weren't angry at me. There was no anger when they punished me. And I think that's what made the difference, because I hear some people that, you know, got punished in a physical way, and I'm baffled because my parents wouldn't do things like that. But at the same time, I didn't understand it. And so I was not close to them. My biggest dream was to be close to them, to feel, you know, that closeness that I would see some in some other people, and I didn't feel that for them. I wouldn't trust my things to them. I wouldn't talk to them. It was I felt very distant, and so I think that was the consequence, and that lasted with my mom until I was 19, and we had a breakdown, and that's when I understood her. Because I told her, you know, that I hated her. And in her face, I told her, I just hate you with all my might. And that's very tough to say to your mother. And so, and she started crying. I had never seen her cry before. And, yeah, so I told her, you know, when I need you the most, that's when you push me down to the pit even further. And she looked at me and just blew up. And she's like, because you're weak and I need to make you strong so that you can survive.
Wow.
You know, and that's when it clicked in my head. Oh, she doesn't hate me.
Yeah.
You know. So, and, you know, it's a work in progress. You just understand something and then you just keep going, you know. And then you understand something new and then you just keep going. And it's never going to end.
How old were you when you immigrated to the United States? I have to retract here. From Venezuela, you moved to the United States. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And how old were you?
I was 26, maybe 27.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't move here as a child. Maybe.
No, I came at 17, and I stayed in North Carolina for 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And my parents didn't. They couldn't put up with the winter. It didn't work for them. So they took us all back. That was the first attempt to come and move here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I finished college in Venezuela, and then I worked for 2 years, and then people went crazy. And when my father decided to move, I was the only one that was not married. And, you know, in Venezuela, we tend to live with our parents because, number one, it's too dangerous to live on your own if you're a woman in there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, number two, they were always traveling, so I had the house to myself most of the time. But he asked me, what do you want to do? And I had my own pottery business, and I said, well, I'm not staying here by myself, you know, with things the way they're going. So in 15 days, I sold everything in the store and, you know, packed my bags and came here with them.
Now, they still live in Florida.
They still live in Florida, uh-huh. Yes.
And so why was Florida chosen?
We've always been in vacationing in Florida because it's only 2.5 hours flight from where we used to live. And so we just knew Florida more than anything else, and he knew people there, and it was just, it made sense to go there, and the weather was similar, and so we just went there, and everything just worked out to be there. A month later, I met my husband, so.
It's meant to be.
Yeah.
So let's go back when you first moved at 17 to North Carolina, and aside from the weather, what was that move like for you, from moving all of a sudden from a Latin American country to the United States?
It's funny you ask, because I just finished doing an interview on my daughter on the first semester of our college, and,
uh-huh.
And so I brought that back with me. I mean, I was 17, coming to North Carolina, Boone, North Carolina. I went to Appalachian State University,
uh-huh.
And, you know, not knowing very well English, and I went there, and my parents were so lucky. All the dorms were filled. And so I ended up being in a waiting list, and I stayed with my parents for the first month. And I was so determined to you know, I wanted the American lifestyle, and by God, I was not going to stay in my parents' house. So I would go every single day looking for that room. And when I went into the dorm, though, I finally went there. I went back home. They gave me the room. I went back home, packed my bags. My father was in Venezuela for business. And my mom didn't know what to do. And I just left. And that's how rebellious I was. And I just left and went to the dorm. Well, I ended up calling my mom 5 times over the phone. It was just so different. I didn't expect it to be so different. And I felt I was very much humbled and when I decided to just go back and stay with my parents again. It scared me, the independence. It scared me not having somebody, because I've been overprotected all my life. It totally scared me not having somebody protecting me. At the same time, my grades were a lot better when I was in the dorm, go figure, than when I was in my parents' house. And I ended up being in the dean's list, you know, because my GPA was very high, and I just loved it, but at the same time, I was very intimidated about me being independent and me being, you know, making my own decisions. I was not ready at 17.
So you said you you're English. Now, obviously, you learned English in Venezuela at first.
Yes.
So you came into the United States knowing some English, and probably textbook English, if anything.
Well, my parents, when I was first, second, and third grade, I went to an American school. With everything was in English. Classes, you were not allowed to speak anything but English in the school. And then I went to an Italian school for a year, and then to a German school for 2 years. And that's another thing that, you know, I understood from, you know, my conversations with them. It was that they were so baffled, you know, when the Americans came to Italy. They were not what the textbooks were presenting, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were Italians fighting against Italians in there, in the American army. And, you know, there were Asian and black and white and, you know, all kinds of nationalities, all kinds of races. And so that the fear of me learning lies in school, I think that prompted them to just keep me learning about everybody, all different cultures. And if they're still the same, you know, they don't trust institutions at all. And so they think that the best school is what they can portray, and they follow their instincts. And that was one of them. And so I was blessed on that end, too, because I ended up, I have friends everywhere now, you know, and I ended up learning all these languages when you were young. You know, you don't even realize that I learned them all at the same time. In my head.
And yet, you know, as a child or as a young person, it's much easier than if we attempted to.
Oh, yes.
Languages now.
Yes.
So let's still talk about more about the immigration for you. And how did it feel when all of a sudden a year later, and basically because of your parents making decisions that they weren't going to be able to handle the weather, going back to Venezuela? How did that feel?
Oh, I was devastated. I didn't want to leave. I cried 17 hours in the car while we drove back to Florida to catch our plane. Did not want to settle in Venezuela. And for the rest, 5 years in college, while I was working and doing all the things that I was working, my only thought was to come back. I was not going to stay there. I loved it here. Because after when I, you know, the beginning was a shock, but towards the end, I had become more independent, and I was more owner of my own thoughts, right? And that would happen over there too, I'm sure, because it was an age thing. But it I just loved the fact that here I felt safe enough to be myself somehow, and not the same in Venezuela. I didn't relate too much when I came back. Once you get used to the American system, it's very difficult to go back to any other system.
Can well imagine.
Yeah.
So why did you have to go back with your parents? Why were you not able to stay and continue your schooling here?
Well, they wouldn't allow me, and I, you know, being a student coming from another country, I couldn't work in this country. If I would have been able to work and pay my own bills, I would have stayed. But the only jobs that I could get were inside the campus, and they were not paying enough. And so there's no way I could have afford tuitions and all that. And they wouldn't leave me, you know, they wouldn't leave their little girl by herself, you know, in a different country. They were just not, I mean, I'm having trouble sending mine to Colorado. So I can imagine what they thought when I said I didn't want to leave. But, in, you know, I think that everybody needs to live certain experiences to make you who you are. And so I don't regret any of it because I learned a lot about myself when I went back. And then, you know, when the time was the right time for my dad to move on from Venezuela, he did. And, you know, I would have never imagined because he left everything, basically, when he came here. When he left Italy, when he became immigrant the first time, he didn't have anything. So desperation was the best motivation, you know. But when he came to the U.S., he was very well set. He had a very nice life in Venezuela. And that was another lesson that I learned, you know. When he found himself again in a line, he said, well, is this worth it? Is everything that I work for to get go back into a line, and it doesn't matter how much money I have, it doesn't matter how hard I worked, and he wouldn't have it. And so that lesson I took with me. And some people say once you're an immigrant, you're always an immigrant. I don't believe so. I don't think I will leave the U.S. because I've always wanted to be here anyway. So there's something that makes some of us immigrants, and there's some things that makes us, you know, set roots in different places. And I think it has to do a lot with what you identify with cultures or with who you are.
I believe that, too. I'm an immigrant, too. But, you know, when I decided that the United States is going to be my home country, I've grounded myself here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is home.
And that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, obviously, in your lifetime, living in this family, there are some lessons, and you just talked about lessons that you've learned. And so for our listening audience, I'd like you to give us what you think was your biggest lesson that you learned, and you would like to share that and pass it on to your children, your family, friends, anybody.
Oh, Lord. I think the biggest lesson that we take for granted is without freedom, and the freedom that I'm talking about doesn't have to be just political or whatever. It's just freedom of thought, you know? Because some people, we are prisoners of ourselves sometimes. And if you don't allow the freedom to think and to dream and to know yourself, you know, and how can you pursue who you want to be or where you want to go? And so without that freedom, we don't have anything. And that is exactly what I've tried to portray to my children, and that's what I embrace from all the lessons I learned from my parents. It's just you have to feel comfortable with who you are. You have to know yourself so that you know where you want to go, or at least know where you don't want to go, you know? And without that, you can't have anything else because you'll never be satisfied. You'll never be happy. You know, you have to have that freedom of thought and there to go within and know yourself and find out what is your essence, what is important to you so that you can find it in this life.
Well said, Susan, well said. Here you go, listeners. Hasn't this been interesting? And before we sign off, Susan, what is your website address?
It's SusanViolanta.com, and then all the other links for my other websites will be there. And, you know, it's my motto, you know, is share your life lessons through storytelling. So there's going to be a lot of little short stories, and hopefully you'll get a little bit of it, my essence in there.
And the listeners certainly will when they go to your website, and I just want to spell that for them. It's S-U-S-A-N, Susan Violante, Violante.com. Check it out. She's got some really good stuff on there. Susan, it's been a real pleasure for me. Thank you so much for coming on line with us, talking about your life, and just a little glimpse into your family, into your book, Innocent War. It's been a real pleasure for me.
Thank you. I'm very happy that you decided to have me on your show. Thank you so much, Irene.
And thank you. And there you go, listeners. Check it out, Innocent War by Susan Violante. It's a great book. I know that once you get into it, you're just going to keep flipping pages because there's some very, very interesting stories in it. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.